Becoming a member at Navy Federal Credit Union could help you to earn more and save more. Their certificate options could earn you more than standard savings accounts with competitive rates.
Not all financial institutions offer you as many choices for savings options as Navy Federal does. For example, you can start your savings journey with a low minimum deposit, add money at any time, and watch your savings grow. Thanks to flexible terms, you can use Navy Federal savings options for all kinds of goals, short or long term. Navy Federal also offers equity loan options to help you get the funds you need to consolidate high interest debt, work on home improvements, or cover any of life's big expenses.
To learn more, visit NavyFederal.org. At Navy Federal, their members are the mission. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender, membership required. Terms and conditions apply, loan subject to approval. In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Hala talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200K for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does all the work for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billing, scheduling, and more. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. Visit Picasso to see thousands of listings. That's PACASO.com.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today, we're answering your listener questions.
Yeah, man, as we are known to do, we've got a listener questions episode lined up for folks. This is an Ask How to Money episode. We've got five great ones, including a listener who's wanting to know if he should deploy the strategy that he's come up with in order to maximize the benefits that he's getting out of his credit cards. Another listener is wondering if she should ditch this second car that she's got, a beloved second car, by the way. This isn't necessarily a car that she's wanting to get rid of, but we'll give our thoughts on that one. And then another listener is wondering how she should respond to some of those different folks who reach out and they're like, hey, I'll buy your home. I've got an all-cash offer. It'll happen fast. What do you do about that?
Yeah, we buy ugly houses. Those guys, you know? And there's like, their ilk has grown.
And don't be offended. Not just ugly houses.
Yeah.
All houses.
Even your semi-beautiful house. yeah, there's a lot of people are getting postcards, getting calls, getting texts. We'll talk about that too. Real quick, Matt.
Plus a couple other questions.
Yeah, you mentioned credit cards and a question we're going to take on that in just a second. But a listener, Ryan, he reached out and he had something helpful that we haven't really talked about on the show that he mentioned to us, and we felt like we should relay his finding. Well, one, he said that in the Pacific Northwest where he lives, Winco is like the Aldi or Lidl equivalent.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Winco.
So he's like, I don't have Lidl or Aldi where I live, and so that's where I go to save money at the grocery store. I've never been to a Winco. I can't vouch for it. Ryan says it's good. I'm going to trust him.
Okay.
And I feel like we should... Yeah, let people know in the great PNW.
Ryan reached out to you personally? I don't think I
saw him. No, he reached out to us via email.
Oh, I must have missed it.
Yeah. So, well, sometimes they fall through the cracks.
I know that happens.
In spam.
Well, that is true.
Yeah.
I feel like they fall through your cracks more than they do mine.
They do.
Because I'll respond and you're like, what the heck? I didn't even see that.
Yeah. Well, so big. Yeah. I'm not sure. Haven't been to Winco, but it sounds like it's going to be a money saving.
Sounds like a winner.
Store. Another thing Ryan mentioned.
A winning company.
And this definitely bears repeating. I don't know if we've talked about it before, but the way credit cards code different purchases, the way Amex or Visa will code something, that directly impacts the kind of rewards that you're going to get based on that purchase. And so
the way they code specific retailers or companies,
yes.
Right?
So when you shop at Walmart, even if you're buying only groceries, it doesn't matter if you use your Amex Blue Cash Preferred trying to snag that 6%, because, hey, I'm buying groceries. No. It has to be at a grocery store as approved or as coded by Amex, right? And so Walmart doesn't qualify as that.
It's considered to be a superstore,
right?
Like the big Walmarts or the big Targets, they don't qualify. You're not going to get that 6% on the Blue Cash Preferred, or is it 3% on the Blue Cash Everyday?
Yes.
I know the different credit card companies, if you go digging for it, you can find some of the different retailers that they've highlighted, or specifically in this case, grocery stores. But otherwise, a lot of it's trial and error.
Yeah. You got to look and see.
You just literally look back at your statement and see whether or not you got that 6% at Winco or whatever regional discount grocery store that you might prefer.
Yeah. One other thing worth mentioning, like when you're filling up gas at a grocery store.
Exactly.
That's another time when you are unlikely to get the higher rate at a gas station that you normally get with one of those gas station cards. Like what Costco's is 4%, I think, on gas, and Sam's Club's
got
5% on gas. So if you're using one of those, but you're filling up at Kroger, you're not going to get that extra bonus cash back. And so
you got to fill up at a Chevron,
right?
Or what's another one?
Or at the Costco itself.
Racetrack.
Yeah, exactly. But if you're, so that's just interesting. Word to the wise, just because you're getting gas doesn't mean you're getting the gas cash back that you're hoping to get.
Yeah,
so
that's a great tip.
Look at how things are coded.
Yeah. And by the way, so you mentioned Aldi. I saw our local news email blast that goes out every day. They had like some sort of poll in there about Atlanta's favorite grocery stores. And guess who wasn't at all, like even in the top 10 anywhere? I looked over it multiple times thinking, surely I'm overlooking my beloved Aldi. And it wasn't in there.
There's no way, because they put Lidl on there. Lidl was bigger than Lidl here.
Lidl was at the very bottom. I think it literally came in like eighth or ninth place. And then, they had an other, and the other was substantially more than Lidl.
Okay.
So maybe...
Maybe that's where Aldi falls in.
I don't know. I felt like I was like ready to fight.
you don't want to see Aldi get slighted.
Folks need to check out Aldi. It's such an affordable place. You have fewer options, so there's less decision fatigue.
Yep.
And I guarantee that you will spend 30% less by going to an Aldi versus something like a Kroger or Winn-Dixie.
Matt guarantees it.
I guarantee, yeah.
And if you don't, you can get a refund from him by emailing him directly.
It's not twice as nice. It's thrice as nice. Joel will spot the difference.
That's right. We got your back. All right, Matt, let's move on. Let's get to our listener questions. But first, let's mention the beer we're having on this episode. This one is called Spring Thrills. It's an IPA by Pizza Port Brewing
out of
Carlsbad, California. This one comes to us again from our good friend Joel. Thank you, Joel, for donating this one to the show.
I'm sure he picked this one because the label, it's...
Surfing.
It's Spring Thrills, but the picture is just a guy surfing. Mm. And Joel, he's a surfer. He loves to surf.
Yep. It's just one of his favorite things to do.
Kook slams. It's one of the things him and I both share.
Yes.
Kind of watching folks get slammed by the waves. It's one of our pastimes.
Yeah. For folks who have a money question and they want us to take it on a future Ask HTM episode, we'd love to hear it. Just go to howtomoney.com/ask. Simple instructions there so you can record your voice memo, get it our way, so we can take it hopefully in the next couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But all right, let's get to our first question of this episode, Matt. This one is about rental real estate and hiring someone to help you out.
Hi, Joel and Matt. This is Malia from Western Washington. I just listened to your episode number 647 about real estate investing, and I have a question that you got very close to answering, but not quite. We're planning to rent our home. It's our first house because we're moving out of state, but we hope to come back someday. Additionally, we bought our home for about half of what it's now valued at. We literally could not buy it today. It was certainly a fixer-upper when we purchased it, and we've made many improvements, but I suspect some fixing is still coming down the pipeline. In our case, where we will be about 800 miles away, would you suggest having a company manage it for us, despite the cost? I'd love to hear your thoughts. Thanks.
Yeah, so Malia, we almost answered your question, but we like to leave people hanging just a little bit.
You can't give them everything all at once.
Yeah, it incentivizes additional great question submissions like this. And by the way, Malia is in Washington, so Malia, make sure you're checking out, what was it, Winco? If you haven't been to a Winco, but I'm sure Malia's crushing it.
No, she's been there.
But you are not alone in not being able to afford the home that you currently own if you were to put it on the market today. I feel like a lot of folks are experiencing that because home price appreciation has been insane, especially over the past several years. The average homeowner has gained around $100,000 in home equity just since the beginning of the pandemic. So imagine a generous benefactor taking about $33,000, hiding it away in your attic for the past 3 years. That's essentially what the market has done for the average homeowner. But at the same time, you know, this does make it really tough out there for all the folks who want to be homeowners, who are looking for that first property. Many of whom they've either gotten priced out of the market, or they're having to change some of their parameters, or having to maybe to look a little bit further out of town in order to be able to afford that. We're certainly bummed to see that. But our question today specifically has to do with turning that primary residence into a rental and how to go about that.
Which you and I, we've always said for a long time that that is one of the easiest ways for a lot of people to get into the rental property game, because it means typically when you buy a rental property, you save up 25% to put down. But if you're buying another primary residence and renting out the place that you've been living in, right, for the past couple of years or something like that, you only have to save up 20%. You get better terms on that next primary purchase. It just depends on, like, well, does this property make sense as a rental property or not? Mm-hmm. But that's how I got into it, Matt. It was renting out my first house, moving into another one. Then 2 years later,
I know it.
Renting out that house and then moving into another one.
It helped you move. Yeah. Most of the times.
But then it's just such a clutch way for a lot of people to get into it. If you're like, I'm overwhelmed, how do I do it? Mm-hmm. That's a really smart, saving up for that next down payment while you're living in that house. But let's talk about property managers. Should you try to manage this property long distance? I would say this: if you owned a few different rental properties and you'd been doing it for years, maybe we would have given you the green light to try it and see how it goes. But we really believe that self-managing is a great way to start. And once you have systems in place, proximity to the property becomes less important. I've had to deal with property issues when I've been out of town, and it used to be a pain in the butt. I used to feel like I had to be at the property every time to meet a contractor or to even for minor fixes. But now I know who to call, and I have my tenants let those people in, and I can get stuff taken care of without being on site. So it's possible to manage a property without being in close proximity, but it might not be ideal given that this is your first rodeo.
Yeah, and with Malia specifically, I mean, it sounds like she's had a good amount of experience dealing with some home repairs, maybe some renovations. So she might actually have a good number of folks that she can count on to handle any work at the house. But the fact is that Malia, you're going to be on the other side of the country. So it's a different calculation. I think most issues like repairs and scheduling work, you can do that from afar. But what if your tenants break their lease and you've got an unscheduled vacancy that's costing you money every single week, every single day, that you don't have someone in there? And the fact is, even if you have tenants who are there for an entire year, if you're managing it yourself, like, you're still looking at having to pay for a plane ticket, rent a car, then pay for lodging just to show up for a couple of days, you know, while your fingers are crossed, hoping that you're going to actually find somebody.
Right.
So this is why it probably makes sense to hire a manager in your specific case.
Not only does that sound costly, it sounds stressful. So
exactly.
If you're planning on visiting every once in a while anyway, you stay with a friend, you come into town every three to 6 months, then maybe you can kind of do it and see how it goes. But even still, I think it makes sense in all likelihood to hire a professional property manager who knows what he or she is doing and have that person kind of be in charge of that unit for you.
Yeah, this makes me think of the previous home that was our primary residence. We actually purchased it as it was a rental. And so the couple who owned the house, they actually were living in France. And that's exactly what they did. They didn't have friends kind of looking after the property, but her dad. So they used to be local, and her dad was still local, and they managed the property. And so obviously that would be something you would want to make sure that you arrange ahead of time. It needs to be a very clear conversation, but I feel like that could be...
And you got to talk about whether you pay them or not too, because they might not want to do it for free.
Exactly. But, you know, again, if you're going to be visiting your parents, in that case, it could possibly make sense. It could be a way for you to maybe test the waters before going through the steps of actually finding a property manager.
Yeah. Okay. So let's say it is time though to find a property manager, which I think in all likelihood it is. If you know other real estate investors in the area, you can ask for referrals so that you can vet a few. And I think you want to interview at least two, probably three or four people before you kind of decide who you want to be managing your property. This is a big deal, right? And you want to make sure they're going to treat it in a similar way that you treat your property and that you would treat your tenants. And so, real estate agents are a place to turn. Typical rate, by the way, for a property manager is half of first month's rent when they find a new tenant for you, and 10% of the monthly rent amount after that. But don't just compare the fees, right? I'd ask to speak to a couple of folks who have used that property manager for at least 2 years, right? Ask them, have they been happy with the service? And remember, you're interviewing this person kind of like to work for you. So be nice, but treat those combos kind of like a fact-finding mission to see how they would treat your rental and how on the ball they're going to be when it comes to finding great tenants and collecting rent and, you know, managing vacancy to keep it to a minimum and keeping your home in good shape overall too. So I think hiring a property manager could be the best thing that ever happened to you in a lot of ways, taking a whole lot of stress off your plate. Or you might find that it's not worth the money at all because they don't take care of it nearly as well as you would.
That's right. And by the way, the fact that you are planning to come back to the home, Malia, it means it's definitely worth holding on to because, you know, based on the fact that you've seen massive appreciation, that probably means that this is an up and coming part of town that you're probably really excited about. And were you to move back, there's a good chance that you're going to have the same values, right? Like you're going to still be drawn to the same things that drew you to buy that home in the first place. But honestly, even if you change your mind and you decide that landlording isn't for you, like it still makes sense to hang on to that property for 3 years and hopefully continue to see appreciation during the interim. And I say 3 years because you have to have occupied a house for 2 out of the past 5 years in order to not have to pay capital gains when the time comes to sell that house. And so hanging on to it, it makes sense because it just gives you some more time. It buys you some time. It allows you to see what your options are. Maybe mortgage rates will continue to drop and maybe the market is going to really heat back up in the next year or two. Who knows? It might, but it's always just nice to have additional options. But again, since you're going to want to live in it again someday and there's a likely chance that you'll be coming back, renting it out for the time being is a really smart move.
Yeah, it makes me think of my friend John Adams, not the former president of the United States, but
not just the second president.
An awesome dude.
Was he the second?
Second, yeah, that's right.
So.
Yeah. But just an awesome dude who lives here in Atlanta, and he's given me lots of great advice over the years about investing in real estate. And he emailed me the other day, and he told me, hey, I'm selling my super swanky house that I've been living in for the last 2 years. I'm moving back into a rental property. Why am I doing this? To avoid capital gains tax. And these are the kind of things, like, this is what's cool about real estate.
Nice.
Is you can move back into a house, even if, let's say, Malia rents it out for 4 years, moves back into it then for 2 years. Boom, then you can sell it and avoid capital gains. So real estate is just so flexible in so many ways. And I love...
It's flexible if you're flexible.
If you're flexible. Exactly, exactly. Well, that's why people do live in flips. Remember when we talked with Carl about that on the show?
That seems like an empty nester kind of move.
I know.
To be honest, if I told Kate we were moving back into one of our houses that we moved from with four kids, I don't think she's going to be down with
that. No, but maybe when you're an empty nester. And that's the thing. Like,
yeah. I love that idea.
John is retired. He's in his 70s. And this is something that he's doing because he's just that savvy when it comes to real estate. And he's like willing to put himself through a little bit of pain to do the right thing to avoid those taxes. So, all right. We've got more questions to get to on this episode, of course, including one about when do you start spending in retirement? How do you kind of make the change from saver to spender? We'll talk about that and more right after this. Cachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics, and in other words, everything your body craves to feel your best. This is where Cachava really earns their 52,000-plus five-star reviews. It tastes amazing. It's creamy and smooth with just water, and it comes in 5 delicious flavors. You can choose from chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, and coconut acai. Cachava is offering How to Money listeners 10% off for a limited time. I've been using Cachava in breakfast smoothies in the morning recently. It's just so nice to pack in a bunch of nutrients early in the AM in a way that's satisfying and energizing. So if you want to optimize your breakfast, your workout shake, be sure to check out Cachava. Just go to Cachava.com/howtomoney. That's spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's Cachava.com/howtomoney.
You probably think it's too soon to join AARP, right? Well, let's take a minute to talk about it. Where do you see yourself in 15 years? More specifically, your career, your health, your social life? What are you doing now to help you to get there? Well, there are tons of ways for you to start preparing today for your future with AARP.
What about that dream job you've dreamt about? Sign up for AARP reskilling courses to help make it a reality. How about that active lifestyle you've only spoken about from the couch? AARP has health tips and wellness tools to keep you moving for years to come. But none of these experiences are without making friends along the way. Connect with your community through AARP volunteer events.
So, it's safe to say, it's never too soon to join AARP. They're here to help your money, your health, and happiness live as long as you do. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/wisefriend.
I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach. Every single summer, we've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host. Or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
We're back from the break. We'll get to that question about flipping the switch, going from saving to spending your nest egg. But before we get to that one, let's hear from a listener who is thinking about implementing a potentially risky credit card strategy.
Hi, Matt and Joel. It's Peter from Boston. I would like your guys' opinion on a new credit card strategy I'm considering. My wife and I both have excellent credit, and we pay our credit cards off in full and on time every month. I just got a new credit card from Wells Fargo that has 2% cash back, a bonus for a certain amount of spending, and also 0% APR for 15 months. What I'm thinking of doing is taking all or most of our expenses and charging them on that card, waiting the full 15 months to pay it off, and then taking the money that I would have been paying towards it every month to pay it off, and putting that in a high-yield savings account, or maybe even some short-term CDs or treasury bills that would mature before the payment date on the card, and then pay it in full after the 15 months is up so I don't accumulate any interest. And then over the 15 months, from my rough calculations, we would have earned, you know, hundreds or even a thousand or more in interest from having that money invested instead of going to pay off the card. So please let me know what you think of that strategy, if there's anything to look out for. Obviously, we would not touch the money, just have it in the account earning interest over that whole time frame. I love your guys' show. I love all the advice that you've given me and helped me with over the years. Thank you so much for all you do, and cheers.
Matt, Peter sounds like a hyper optimizer.
He does. By the way, he said cheers, and he's from, did he say he's from Boston?
Oh,
do you think he maybe think he's a fan?
I mean, who doesn't love that show?
I have fond memories of sitting as a little kid. My dad was really into Cheers as I like literally back when it was on TV.
Yeah.
And I remember Sam Malone, like and crew. I remember being
Ted Danson, Woody Harrelson. Oh, that was a good cast.
This was solid.
It was a good show. but like, I mean, that's in your vein too. You're like, you like to optimize things to the nth degree.
Oh, I thought you meant Cheers.
Oh, that too.
Yes. No, I am an optimizer. And when when Peter's question came in, I was like, yes, a man after my own heart.
You're like, I thrive on stuff like this. Well, and we love the idea of opening up a new credit card in order to score a bonus and better rewards. Like, we're all in on that, right? We talk about all the time using credit cards well, and that is one of the things you can do to kind of, as long as you use credit cards properly and you pay your balance off on time and in full, that can actually help you in your pursuit of financial independence. Most people are going to benefit significantly from having three-ish cards. And I say three-ish because three is a good number. Four might be better for some. But like, it's easy enough to remember when to use which card without things getting out of hand if you have three or four. Some of these people, if you go overboard, you might have 10, 11, 12. You're going to have to be organized at the same time if you're going to go in that direction, right? But you got to pay attention to make sure you're getting enough value out of each card and that your spending isn't getting out of hand because of a proliferation of credit cards too.
Sure, but with Peter's attention to detail, I feel like he could be the kind of guy who has a dozen credit cards.
Yeah.
But he's trying to take things one step further, right? Like, he wants to take advantage of the 0% intro rate that this new card is offering. And so, is that smart? I mean, I don't think it's dumb necessarily, but it is possible that it might not be worth the additional hassle. This question, it does make a bit more sense in an era of solid savings rates, because a few years ago, it would have been completely silly,
yes.
Right? But now, I mean,
I can eke out 0.5%. Should I do that?
Exactly.
Like, well, probably not.
No, there's a legit decent rate. And when you have that on thousands of dollars within a completely safe and liquid account that's in the 5% range, you're going to earn a decent amount in interest. And so, Peter, you're right. Saving those dollars instead of forking them over to the credit card company over these 15 months while you're not paying off that balance, it gives you an arbitrage play of, you know, basically maybe $700-$800 in your favor. That's a decent return. But it kind of comes down to a number of factors. You need to make sure that you are approaching it correctly.
Yeah, so it kind of makes me think of buy now, pay later, Matt, which is something we advise against. And a lot of people say, why do you advise against that? Because you're just splitting things up into installments and you're not paying interest on it. It's because of the behavioral side of things, and it causes people to spend in ways that they otherwise wouldn't. And so that's something that Peter's going to have to be conscious of too, because if he has a history of overspending, of racking up credit card debt that he couldn't pay off, we'd say this strategy was just too risky. It's not worth chancing it, right, for this slightly arbitrage return mm-hmm. over the course of a year plus. And so, yeah, if this is a balance transfer, if you're shuffling around debt that you'd accumulated but you couldn't pay off, I would have a totally different reaction to this. But if you're the kind of person who's never carried a balance and you're just incredibly astute in your attention to detail, and this is just purely an optimization strategy, and you're going to set Google Calendar reminders and all that kind of stuff to make sure you do everything on time, and it sounds like fun to you, then I feel like we can give the green light on this. I feel like this is something that Peter can handle if he so chooses.
It's sort of like, it makes me think of if you've got a friend who, yeah, maybe they used to be an alcoholic, maybe they used to drink a little bit too much, and you know that there's a sweet beer fest coming up, right? Like, this is a beer fest where they're going to have some of the choicest beers from all around the world, and you want to go with a friend. Well, I'm probably not going to invite that friend because it might be playing with fire for him, right?
Like, it might challenge their sobriety. You don't want to do that.
Exactly. It's too slippery of a slope, and that's how we kind of view using credit cards in a more optimal way with someone who has had a history of overspending.
Yeah, and it's different to say, hey, okay, I'm going to start using and spending in order to generate better cash back and stuff like that. But when you're playing with the 0% interest rate game to try to arbitrage it, that's like a level deeper, and the potential for error can be even more catastrophic.
It's kind of like, yeah, it's graduating up in levels of complexity, because you've got essentially, I mean, it's we're talking about not just one statement's worth of spending, we're talking about 15 statements worth of spending.
Yeah,
it could really add up. And we should also mention that it wouldn't be smart to do this if you don't have a robust emergency fund. If you don't have much cash in the bank, this is certainly too risky of an endeavor. You build up the amount of money that you would have put towards those purchases, and instead you're saving that up. But if that's the only cash you have and you actually do have an emergency come along, you're going to be tempted to tap that money, to tap those funds, and then you're stuck with a bill potentially that you don't have a way of actually paying down at the end of those 15 months. But I agree. He's got to be really buttoned up in order to avoid financial troubles here that could come along if he didn't dot all of his I's, if he didn't cross all of his T's. Because truly, if you forget to pay off that balance by the time this promotional period is over, you're going to start accruing interest on any unpaid balance, not just on any new purchases. So again, it's definitely possible. And from a principal standpoint, I want to say 100% yes, but you just got to make sure that you're going about things the right way. And certainly if you do choose to go this path, Peter, I would probably pay the balance off even just a few full days early, just in case. I even do that now, month to month. I always pay it a full business day prior to the due date, because they got the little calendar drop down with a little square around the date. And for whatever reason, I don't know if it's like superstition or what, but I always like to give myself a little bit of buffer and always mark the day right before that date.
I don't want to chance it. Don't want to chance it. And you definitely don't want to chance this. So definitely pay it off in advance just to make sure you've got plenty of wiggle room. And the other crucial aspect, by the way, that he needs to consider is the damage it could potentially do to his credit score, because an extreme balance that he's racking up on that card because of the 0% APR for an extended period of time, like let's say he's got a $15,000 balance at the end of this 15 months on an $18,000 credit line, that could do a whole lot of damage. That could bite him in the butt in regards to his credit utilization. That goes through the roof. Mm-hmm. That brings his score down. And especially if you're looking to make a major purchase and take a loan out for that major purchase, buying a home, something like that, it could impact in a massive way. This could be cheap, not frugal, and it could really come back to cost you a lot more money than you're making in this like tiny little arbitrage that you're trying to pull off. So this is something, Matt, that I probably would have done like 10 years ago, but I'm not really willing to jump through the hoops now to arbitrage or make a little bit of money. So I mean, like I said, I would have done it 10 years ago in all likelihood. So to each their own, we're in different phases in life. And so I think if Peter really wants to jump through the hoops, if he's taking into consideration all of these other things and he can meet the parameters so that he's not being charged any interest or fees and he's coming out $500-700 richer, go for it.
That's right. Yeah. So Peter, best of luck to you. And by the way, if this is something where you are really buttoned up, you're really organized, you pay attention to the details, and you are looking to take advantage of some of the sweet offerings out there, the Chase Sapphire Preferred, they just upped their bonus from 60,000 to 80,000 points. That is pretty sweet. And so we'll make sure to link to that one in our show notes for this episode.
Always one of our favorite cards, and they just sweeten the pot.
That's right. But let's hear from our next listener, and he has a question about retirement. He wants to know when he's going to be able to start tapping those funds. Let's hear it.
Hi, Matt and Joel. Daniel from Greensboro. I'm going to ask a question that I have not heard discussed on all the money podcasts I listen to. I'm 51 and will retire in June 2023 with a full pension. My wife still works and it's stable. The only debt we have is a mortgage at 2.25%. We live below our means. We have about 3 months of emergency funds, but that doesn't really matter too much because of the stable pension. We can live off my salary if she loses her job. My 401k investment is 6% with a 5% match, putting 17% in my Roth 401k. I won't be able to contribute to my employee 401k or Roth 401k, so I'll set up a Roth IRA after retirement. I have about $60,000 in investments, all indexed in total stock market funds, with treasury I-bonds of $10,000. You two do a good job helping other people save and invest, so my question is, when can I start spending my funds? When can I actually withdraw my investment and to enjoy my money? Thank you.
All right. Sounds like it's party time for Daniel.
It's Matt. True.
Yeah.
Next month it is.
Rock on, man. Yeah. Congrats on retiring next month. And at the age of 51, like, that is really impressive. And the work they've done to build up that nest egg, and a diverse nest egg too, is impressive. So, and it just, I don't want to say much on this, but coming up with a plan to keep yourself busy, Daniel, pursuing activities, hobbies, and relationships or volunteer opportunities, this is, I think, going to help you enjoy your upcoming retirement. A lot of people, they idealize what retirement's going to look like, and then they get there and they're like, oh, what do I do? Maybe that first month is great. You're relaxing. And then you're like, I'm at a loss. I don't know what my purpose is anymore. And so I think knowing what your purpose is going to be when you do leave work next month is important. But it sounds like you've already got the essential expenses taken care of with this recurring pension payment you're going to be receiving. Your wife's salary is just gravy, which is amazing. And so now it's time to start thinking big about what you want retirement to look like for you guys, which really, I think, means asking a lot of big questions.
Ooh, yeah. It's less a matter of here is exactly when you can withdraw from where, but it's more like, well, what do you want retirement to look like? For instance, like, how much longer does your wife, how much longer does she want to keep working? Because it's nice that she doesn't have to, but losing that income might mean cramping your lifestyle. It might mean tapping those dollars that are earmarked for retirement in order to keep it up. And by the way, you mentioned opening a Roth IRA once you no longer have access to contribute to your 401k. Well, you only are going to have access to contribute to an IRA as long as your wife is working, because your pension income does not qualify you to be able to contribute to an IRA. So keep that in mind as well. But as far as the different lifestyle questions, like, do you see yourselves traveling internationally for a month each year? Well, if so, that nest egg will likely need to grow in order to fund all of those fun trips. Or, you know, maybe your budget is just going to stay the same. Is it your goal to give a certain amount of money to your kids? Or with whatever money you have left over, are you just planning to give it to charity? There are so many different goals here that you could potentially set for yourselves. There's so many options. And when you decide to tap those funds is going to largely depend on the role that money is going to play. It truly does depend on what it is that you're seeking after and what you want your life to look like.
Yeah, so there's definitely an introspection factor here and some work that your wife, you and your wife need to do in order to kind of figure out well, what does it look like and what is the point of this money? But it's also important to mention, Matt, that there is kind of some of this money is under lock and key to a certain extent for a little while. It's locked away for the better part of the next decade until you're 59 and a half for both your 401k and your IRA as well, unless you want to pay tax and penalty to take it out, which isn't ideal. And so especially since this is money that's going to be necessary over three or probably even four decades, you don't want to touch it when you're going to have to pay the penalty right before that 59 and a half age. And so hopefully your retirement dollars have grown, maybe doubled by then. That would be par for the course, right? That would make sense. I would say that's likely. The next goal would be then to hold off taking Social Security as long as you can if you remain in good health. But Social Security combined with your pension and then maybe even a paid off mortgage at that point, that means you can likely feel really comfortable spending a decent chunk of that nest egg between the ages of 59 and a half and 70. And so that's kind of how I would envision this money as bridging the gap for that decade. Unless that is you have significant giving goals, right? And then you probably don't want to tap most of that money. You want to make sure you leave some of that invested for those giving endeavors that you have. And by the way, there are other ways to tap that money early, like a Roth conversion ladder or this thing called ESPP. It's equal substantial payments, right? Equal substantial payment plan.
Something like that. Yeah.
And so basically you can pull that money out penalty free if you adhere to certain rigorous withdrawal methods. And we'll actually link to a post in our show notes that does a good job describing it and telling you how that works.
There are ways of going about it, but
it's helpful to know it's possible, but
yes,
even still,
exactly,
that might not be the best option.
Exactly. And honestly, I feel like that there is a way to start drawing on that money once you are of age without it feeling like you're completely flipping a switch, because going from saving to spending, it isn't like an on or off sort of thing. And I think there are ways for you to slowly kind of start making some withdrawals from those accounts once you're eligible without it feeling like you are completely depleting those funds, where you're kind of just wading out there into the water, as compared to just doing a cannonball. And the same thing with when it comes to like the lifestyle that you're going to lead as well. I think there are ways for you even now. I mean, you know, you're a month out, but there are ways now for you to proactively start thinking about how it is that you want to spend your time.
Yeah.
But whether it's how you spend your time or how you spend your money, some retirees do find it hard to actually spend the money that they've saved. And in your case, you guys have been really prudent for a long time. You've saved wisely and you've stuck it out. You've got that baller pension, but we also want you to be able to enjoy that money that you've been able to amass. You know, that 4% rule exists for a reason. We want to make sure that you're able to live into your much later years without running out of money. But even that, it's not perfect. You're not going to be able to exactly pinpoint and determine exactly how much money you are going to be withdrawing every single year in order to have the exact right amount of money when you die. Yeah. No one knows what that's actually going to be.
Well, and at the same time, when you have guaranteed income, which a pension provides, and if that covers most of your essential needs, that means you have even more options at your disposal. The 4% rule is really about living solely off your portfolio. And so if you have other sources of income,
like a pension,
it means you have just a lot more options when it comes to how and when you tap those funds.
Exactly.
You don't want to be too conservative for going life-changing experiences because you're pinching pennies, right? But you also don't want to become a spendthrift. But I'm not really worried about Daniel going that route considering how diligent he's been. So Daniel, there is no slam dunk.
He's like, I want to enjoy my money.
Right, which I appreciate.
I'm ready.
He's like, I've done the hard work, and now I do want to enjoy it.
What if he blows it all in like 5 years?
I hope not.
Daniel, what have you done?
But even still, like if you move into a fancier house, you keep the house with the low mortgage, you make sure you're not outstripping that 4% rule by a massive amount. But I've even talked to my parents, in order to delay taking Social Security, taking 6% out of their portfolio a year makes more sense than tapping Social Security earlier because of that guaranteed 8% return that you get. So that is definitely one important factor in the equation. But then so are the personal goals. Lots to take into consideration here, but I feel like if anybody can hit the nail on the head, can spend without overdoing it, it's probably going to be Daniel. But Matt, we got a couple other questions to get to, including a listener who wants to know whether or not she should keep a car that she loves in her life. We'll get to that and more right after this. Cachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics, and in other words, everything your body craves to feel your best. This is where Cachava really earns their 52,000 plus five-star reviews. It tastes amazing. It's creamy and smooth with just water, and it comes in 5 delicious flavors. You can choose from chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, and coconut acai. Cachava is offering How to Money listeners 10% off for a limited time. I've been using Cachava in breakfast smoothies in the morning recently. It's just so nice to pack in a bunch of nutrients early in the AM in a way that's satisfying and energizing. So if you want to optimize your breakfast, your workout shake, be sure to check out Cachava. Just go to cachava.com/howtomoney. That's spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com/howtomoney.
You probably think it's too soon to join AARP, right? Well, let's take a minute to talk about it. Where do you see yourself in 15 years? More specifically, your career, your health, your social life? What are you doing now to help you to get there? Well, there are tons of ways for you to start preparing today for your future with AARP.
What about that dream job you've dreamt about? Sign up for AARP reskilling courses to help make it a reality. How about that active lifestyle you've only spoken about from the couch? AARP has health tips and wellness tools to keep you moving for years to come. But none of these experiences are without making friends along the way. Connect with your community through AARP volunteer events.
So, it's safe to say, it's never too soon to join AARP. They're here to help your money, your health, and happiness live as long as you do. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/wisefriend.
I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach. Every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host, or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
All right, we are back from the break, and we've got two more questions to get to, including a question from a listener who is wanting to know how to respond to those folks who are reaching out about buying her home, like with an all-cash offer. But before we talk about homes, let's talk about cars.
Hello, my name is Amy, and I live in Northern California. I appreciate the educational and non-judgmental approach your podcast takes. After listening to a few episodes, I've been thinking about my finances in a totally different way. On one of your episodes, you guys talked about if you drive your car less than 7,500 miles per year, insurance rates might qualify for a reduction. I started working from home last year, which significantly lowered my annual mileage. So after listening to that episode, I thought, why not? I called my insurance company and now save $20 per month on insurance premiums. Thank you for that. After listening to Money Gears, I'm considering selling my second car, a Mini Cooper Countryman, super fun, to accelerate Gear 3. I have another vehicle that is paid off. The money not spent on the second car would be diverted to the debt keeping me in Gear 3. I can afford the car, it's fun to drive, the interest rate is low, and it's nice having a backup vehicle. My backup car is a 2007 minivan, a reliable car, but it makes me feel old driving it. My son is also driving, so it's nice not sharing a vehicle. But my inner voice, which now includes your voices, is saying getting financially stable isn't always sexy and will take sacrifice. In this case, mostly to my ego. What is exciting is the thought of being out of Gear 3 in 2 years rather than six. If you have any confirming thoughts on this, I could use the push, though I think I know what needs to happen. Thanks.
So a couple things, Joel. I love that we're voices that are bouncing around in her head now after only listening for for a few episodes.
Although at some point she's going to end up in a straitjacket in a padded room. And she's like, I hear the voices. No, they won't stop talking to me about saving money.
I love that we are challenging her. But like she said, in a non-judgmental way, that's what we're all about
here. That's the goal.
And by the way, she mentioned her Mini Cooper, which totally makes me... Did you ever watch The Italian Job?
Yeah. Well, I've watched everything with Edward Norton.
The Bank Heist movie. So
love him. Well, one of the things she meant... I I love that she shared a money win too. So it's like she's already taking action, and she's trying to take a lot of action, and she's already done some of the low hanging fruit. Like $20 a month though is meaningful, because we've talked about the rule of 173 in a recent How to Money newsletter.
$20 on its face doesn't sound like a whole lot.
No, it doesn't. But when you're saving that every single month, the rule of 173 says that over the course of a decade, if you invest that money instead, that's going to be worth $3,460. So kudos to Amy. She's doing awesome stuff. That's not chump change. And since you're relatively new here, we should give you our thoughts on cars. Matt and I, we view them radically different than most people do. And it's been our goal to bring down our vehicle costs as much as possible in our own individual families. We want to see more How to Money listeners ditching a car from their life, like having fewer rides, having fewer cars that they're paying for. Because it's not just about the cash that you get from selling that sweet Mini Cooper that you love. It's about the recurring costs that you're going to avoid: maintenance, insurance, depreciation. The longer it sits there in your life, the more it is going to depreciate, go down in value, and you're eating that from a financial perspective. So yeah, we're always going to preach the fewer cars, smaller transportation budget sort of way of viewing things.
Yeah, and basically what you're getting at, Joel, is the total cost of car ownership. The average annual cost of that in this country, it's nearing $10,000 to own and maintain and run a vehicle. That is a lot of money. And granted, it's possible to bring some of these annual costs down, and you can do that by driving older vehicles, because depreciation is a main factor in that overall cost of ownership. And so a way that you can avoid that is just by driving a much older car.
Like our 07 minivan. That's a perfect sweet spot right
Absolutely.
There.
Absolutely. I mean, oftentimes you're going to see the most depreciation in the first 5 years. So even anything that's even just 5 years old, you're going to not feel the impacts of a depreciation as much.
Not going to hit you as hard.
Exactly. And we're not sure how old your Mini Cooper is. Mini Cooper Countryman, so it's like the bigger version.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, that car is leaking cash, even when it doesn't feel like it is. That's just what cars do to us, in addition to you actually having a car payment on that car as well. But, you know, we understand, like, having a fun second car like this would be... Honestly, it would be a reasonable decision if you were further along within the money gears, you know, after you've had some years of debt pay down, you've built up some wealth. But we don't love the choice given where you are. You said that you're in money gear three, which means you've got some high interest rate debt in your life. Oftentimes that means credit cards. And with credit card interest rates hovering around 20%, you are paying out the nose in interest. And honestly, that's what makes this such a difficult car to hang on to.
Exactly.
When you're paying interest towards that, when you should be paying off some of that higher rate interest debt.
Yeah. And she also said, Matt, she said that she can afford this car. And I don't mean this in a disparaging way, but the truth is, can you actually afford this car? It's not like it's in danger of getting repossessed or anything, of course, but in being able to make payments.
No, she is making the payments on it. So.
But being able to make the payments or not being forced to sell it doesn't necessarily mean that you can afford it.
Sure.
Right? And so much depends on what your goals are. And it seems like those are shifting, Amy, which is great. Like, we love seeing that. We are of the belief that one of the best things money can buy is independence. And so if you're sacrificing quite a bit of that for a cute second car, that's certainly your prerogative, but it's not what we'd recommend. And so, I mean, what other awesome potential future splurges might you be missing out on by keeping this car in your life?
Yeah.
That's a good question, because you are preventing something in the future by continuing to keep maybe that high interest rate debt around, by keeping this car around, and by taking a longer path towards more financial freedom in your life, not to mention the stress that you pile on top of it. So is that car worth all of those things?
It's, now can you afford it?
Right. A lot of people say they can afford something, but the reality is they're not paying themselves first. They haven't been investing or saving, and they still have debt linger in their life. And so it's hard. I don't know. Affordability is like an interesting word to use, because, yeah, you might be able to make the payments, but can you really afford it when we're talking about trying to reach financial independence?
That's right. Yeah. And she also mentioned she liked the idea of hanging on to it because her son's driving as well, and so they don't have to worry about somebody not having a car in the house. But what I'll say is that Kate and I, our family, we've been a one-car family for 15 years now, and it has rarely been an issue. You just schedule it. You just talk about it a little bit. Or, honestly, you can walk or bike. That's always an option. But there's also the ability to Uber and Lyft, which isn't something that you could do 15 years ago because it didn't exist.
Easier, yeah.
But it makes it so much easier these days. Literally, I'm going to Uber or catch a Lyft after we record this episode because I'm going to go to a meeting. No big deal. Totally doable. But Amy, something else to consider. You might want to take advantage of the fact that your Mini, that it's actually gone up in value over the last couple of years. This is a phenomena that we're not likely going to see for years to come. It's not quite at its peak like it was last year, about 16 months ago. I think that's kind of when the used car market was at its peak.
But it's still hot.
Prices were still climbing at that point. But man, get that sweet payday for a car that you don't necessarily need. Because ultimately, you summed up our views well. Getting your finances in ship shape, it is not a sexy endeavor. But you mentioned that the biggest hit that you'll take is to the ego. And I think it's worth that trade-off, which you can mentally power through.
Yeah.
I like what you said too, Joel, about her goals shifting. It seems like she's got different priorities. And so align your spending, align what it is that you are going to do with your money moving forward with how it is that you value those things. It doesn't matter that you already own this car. That's the endowment effect, right? Like you feel...
Or sunk cost fallacy.
Or sunk cost, yeah. It, like in your mind, it's worth it more to you because of the kind of the emotional ties, but don't let the fact that you wouldn't make that purchase today keep you from selling it.
Yeah. Well, it also makes me think, Morgan Housel, who we've had on the show, we bring up quotes from him every now and again because he's just so smart. He used to be a valet back in college, and he talked about how when he was parking cars, the people driving the fancy cars, he didn't ever know what they look like or care about them. He cared about the cool car, like the Ferrari or whatever it was that he was parking. And a lot of people think, oh, if I get this car, I'm going to look cool. And no, that's just not how people perceive you. People don't look at the person. They look at the car itself. And so nobody really makes that correlation between what you drive and how they think of you. I also drive an old Honda minivan, right? So and at times I've been self-conscious, but I've really gotten over it over the years and have learned to care less and less about it because I'm funneling money on purpose into stuff that I care about a whole lot more. And that gets me excited, and it actually gets me energized to drive the old raggedy minivan.
It's a badge of honor as opposed to something that you're ashamed of or that makes you feel old.
Exactly. But Matt, let's get to our last question for this episode. This one is about all those pesky home buying calls and texts that we all get from time to time.
Hi, Joel and Matt. This is Sandy from Massachusetts. I wanted to share that over the last 2 weeks, I've had no less than 3 postcards in my mailbox from individuals who want to purchase my home, and they tout how they will give a fair market price and there's no commission and they will take care of traditional closing costs. At any rate, I have no intention of selling as I'm happy where I am and I have one of those mortgages that are less than 3% interest rate. But I was always curious about whether or not this is ever a good financial move for a seller versus working with an established realtor. And from the person who is buying, you know, how is this a good financial move? I'm just curious and wondered if you could share your thoughts on that. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
All right, Sandy, thank you so much for that question. And we are so glad to hear that you've got that sweet low rate, under 3%, that you like where you are, where you're living. And so what's up with these vulture-like real estate buyers? Because they often say they're going to pay fair market value. But it is worth it for them to make these offers because that's unlikely going to be the case. The only way to really know what the fair market value for your home is to actually list it, to actually allow a wide range of buyers to have a look at it and to let the market decide. That's how you figure out fair market value. Mm-hmm. They're willing to pay you fair, what I decide is fair value. but most of these home buyers are looking for a bit of a deal. So it makes all the sense in the world for them to cast their net wide and to try to find a deal.
Exactly. And we've talked about ways to lower your rent before on the show, Matt. As a tenant, you're trying to figure out what your landlord's pain points are. You're trying to alleviate those in hopes of a smaller monthly rent amount. And these postcard home buyers, or the text message or the phone call home buyers, they're the ones who are incessantly trying to reach you to make an offer on your home.
Got like 5 of those on my phone every single
day.
It's unreal.
All the time. And basically they're doing the same thing. They're trying to alleviate a pain point too, but it often comes at the seller's expense. A lot of folks don't really know what their home is worth. They know what they paid for their home, and their eyes might get as big as saucers when someone reaches out offering to pay them a good bit of money to sell the property. But that doesn't mean that these people are paying fair market value. They're basically trying to make it sound like, I'm going to make it easy and I'm going to pay you a lot of money. But the truth is, they're not going to pay you as much as somebody else would if you were to list it on the open market I mean, almost to a T, almost always. You're going to get some sort of lowball offer.
Exactly. But they, I mean, it likely will be easier, and that's the fee that you're paying is, is the convenience, basically.
That's why they say, like, we buy ugly houses. It's because,
yeah,
like,
hey, you don't have to do anything.
Exactly. Exactly. So maybe you don't have to lift a finger.
You don't have to get it show
worthy. No paint job, none of that stuff, which makes it easier on you, but it also means it's going to be less profitable.
Yeah, basically, these are cold calls. And, you know, again, these folks are fishing, they're casting their net wide, and the ones doing it are often wholesalers. They're house flippers who can only make money if they're able to snag the home at a pretty drastic discount. And a lack of inventory is driving up these solicitations. These folks who are knocking on your... I've never had someone knock on my door. I made that up. I get a lot of text, voicemails.
No, I haven't had that either.
And letters, though.
That would cross the line for me.
I kind of feel like it would, too. But I would probably take it a little more seriously because I'm like, oh, wow, you're like right here. But I still wouldn't do it. It's hard for investors to find deals given the current constraints of the market and where inventory is today. And so these folks are reaching out to see if they can make an emotional or if they can make an economic plea that might resonate with you as an individual. Oftentimes, they're just hoping to snag a deal, like one deal out of 500 postcards they send out, or 1,000. It's not necessarily a high success rate, but that one sale can net them some meaningful returns.
They're hoping there's one sucker in 1,000, basically, is what you're saying, which is true. And they're hoping that one idiot comes along every now and again to sell them their house.
And it's not necessarily, like, I don't want to... As an individual, as like, you still have the ability to make your own decisions. Like, you still have agency to say yes or to say no. And to a certain individual out there, to them, it might make sense because they are like, honestly, I know that this is a teardown. So, sure, I'll sell it to you.
I mean, if you know you know they're paying you more than you could get elsewhere, go for it.
Exactly.
But it's unlikely to be the case. It's not the case most of the time. That is not how these guys make money, by paying too much for teardowns. And I don't think you're planning on going down this path, Sandy. Sounds like you like your house, like where you're living. But to everyone else out there listening, hang up on these people. Don't call the number on the postcard. If they really want to buy your home, most of the time, you'd be short-sighted to take their offer. Yeah, they can get you money quicker, but it's going to be less money. And so, I don't know, at least talk to a trusted neighborhood agent first to see what they think your house could sell for. Because the only time it might make sense, like you said, Matt, is if your home needs a ton of repairs, it might be a teardown. You're unwilling to do these things in order to list it. If it greases the wheels and makes it easy to do this thing and staging it and all that stuff isn't in the cards. But even still, I would say the insights of an agent would be helpful because they might know something you don't know. And they might see that you're sitting on a gold mine because of the lot, location, whatever. Or the demand that's particularly high in your area, and that you'd be shortchanging yourself to sell to one of these like fly-by-night home buyers. So they're not evil, but they're trying to make a buck at your expense. That's for sure.
That's right, man. But Sandy, again, we love that you've got one of those crazy low mortgages. Hang on to that thing forever. Mm-hmm. Don't pay it down early. Instead, take any additional money that you might have and put it towards either investing or any other additional financial goals that you might have. But Joel, let's go ahead and get back to the beer that you and I enjoyed. This was a Spring Thrills. This is an IPA by Pizza Port, donated to us by our buddy Joel out there on the West Coast. What were your thoughts on this beer?
So this is a West Coast beer, but to me, this was a perfect West Coast, East Coast combo. It was like a hybrid.
Oh, yeah?
It was juicy, but it was piney and bitter at the same time. And so, like, some of those resiny notes, too. Like, it was a little sticky.
Yeah, I feel like
that's... In a good way.
In my mind, that's why it had, like, West Coast IPA written all over it. In my mind, like, the East Coast is, like, the sweet orange juice, hazy juice bombs, whatever, whereas this...
But it had
me,
some juicy elements. It wasn't so bitter.
It wasn't overly bitter. It certainly had some nice malts going on. Maybe it's the kind of beer that, you know, you're sitting there after you've, like, gone surfing, you got the sex wax out, and you're kind of rubbing down your board, making sure... I think you use that so you don't slip off your board.
That's what I hear.
Is that right, Joel? You have to correct me after the fact if I'm saying it wrong. But Pizza Port Brewing, this is a brewery that I've actually been to randomly on a road trip about 10 years ago.
Nice.
I don't remember what I had when we went there, but I definitely know that I've been fortunate enough to have a Pizza Port beer in the past. But I'm glad that you and I got to enjoy this one here today on the podcast, buddy.
For sure. Agreed. But that's going to do it for this episode. And if you have a listener question, if you've got a question for us, we'd love to take it. Just go to howtomoney.com/ask for the easy instructions so that you can submit a voice memo, get it over our way, and hopefully we can take it in a couple weeks. But
that's right. Make sure to sign up for the newsletter if you have not yet already done that. Just head to howtomoney.com forward slash /newsletter. We've got links to the newsletter and basically everything we publish online, because we want to make sure that you are getting free, fun, and helpful content, financial content, delivered to your inbox every Tuesday morning. It's not over the top, you know, just once a week.
Yeah, yeah, and it's good stuff. It's helpful, and like you said, it's free. So
also, sell us your house.
But for way less than it's worth. All right, that's going to do it for this episode. Until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it! Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.